Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, so then we will move agenda item number 3, and we're gonna take that on then. So this is a time and place for a hearing from the Region of California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, consider adoption of a revised NPDES, National Pollution Discharge Elimination System Permit for the DG Fairhaven Power LLC Power Generation Facility. This item's been properly noticed. Will all those who expect to give testimony in this matter please rise and raise your right hand and take the following oath? Do you swear and affirm to tell the truth in this matter? As I see it, Mr. Grady, you are up to bat.
Mr. Chair, while they're getting ready, if I could make a suggestion, item 10 and item 3 present a very similar issue. In fact, it might even be identical. And Lisa Bernard has prepared a presentation in item 10 that sort of goes through this fly ash issue. So you could open a hearing for both of those and then have us, you know, give an opportunity for item 10 to be presented and then public comment.
Okay, that might be a very efficient way to do it. I would probably need to read number 10 into the record. Correct. So I will do that now. This is a time and place of a hearing of the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider adoption of an NPDES permit in the matter of the Town of Scotia Wastewater Treatment Facility and the Eel River Power Cogeneration Facility. This item's been properly noticed. Will all those who expect to give testimony in this matter please stand, raise your right hand, and take the following oath? Do you swear and affirm that you will tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
Fantastic. So then we will take these on in companion items. I'd remind anybody that wants to address us in public forum to please give speaker cards. I have 2 at this time. Ms. Bernard, good morning.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the board. Thank you for your attention this morning. I'm here to talk about the town of... My name is Lisa Bernard. I'm staff to the Regional Water Board. And did you already enter the file into the record?
No.
I'm sorry. Okay, so I'd like to enter the file into the record this morning for Town of Scotia and the Eel River Power Cogeneration Plant.
So we need that, just to be clear, for 9 and 10?
Yes.
3 and 10.
Or 3 and 10. I'm sorry. God, I'm having...
And really, I'm going to talk primarily about the Town of Scotia and the Eel River Cogeneration Plant, but I think you'll see that the issue that's being discussed later is really an overlap. And so one of the reasons that we're here this morning talking about this instead of having it on the uncontested calendar is because Eel River Power and Town of Scotia are two separate entities, and they're regulated under one NPDES permit. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that, and also this is going to give us the opportunity to address the issue of the language that's contained within this NPDES permit, which I want to point out is a liquid permit. We are permitting the disposal of liquids. We are not permitting the disposal of solid waste under this permit, and I believe that also applies to the Fairhaven permit as well. So I'm going to give you a little history, talk about the differences between the previous order that regulates these two facilities and the current permit, and where we had some comments that we weren't able to accommodate, particularly relating to Eel River Power. I just want to give you a little overview. This is the Town of Scotia. The picture is a little bit skewed, but we have the wastewater treatment facility, the mechanical portion here, and then these 3 ponds along here provide the majority of the biological treatment. Then we have the Eel River Power Plant right here. And both of these facilities discharge into 20 acres of what we are now calling the storage pond. The previous iteration of this pond was actually to float logs for the old mill. And so we're taking advantage here of an existing feature, and they use this for storage of water, particularly in the summertime when discharges to the river are prohibited. Okay, So in the wintertime, discharges from both this facility and this facility discharge right about here through a clarifier directly to the Eel River. In the previous permit, when we adopted it in 2006, Palco was still an entity. That was before their bankruptcy. And so the entire town of Scotia, as well as the power plant and the wastewater treatment facility, were all owned by Pacific Lumber Company. And then through the bankruptcy, those interests transferred to the Town of Scotia Company, LLC, which then sold off a portion of their interest to Eel River Power, which operates as Greenleaf Power. And so this portion no longer belongs to Town of Scotia Company. The pond itself, as well as the wastewater treatment facility, still belong to the Town of Scotia Company, and they are in the process with the local agency formation commission, LAFCO, to become a community services district, but that's a long process and we aren't quite sure when it's going to come to fruition. So I just wanted to give you a little flavor here. Here's the pump house. Oops, go back. Go back. Okay, I don't know how to go back. That was the pump house at the end of the third at the end of the third pond. Okay, I'll just stop. I'll take care of it. Thank you. Perfect. This is the pump house at the end of the third pond, which then transmits water up to the storage pond from the wastewater treatment facility. And then so I apologize for the contrast here, but this is the power plant, which is located immediately adjacent to the storage pond. And there are five individual points of discharge from various processes at the power plant that discharge into the storage pond. Okay, so draft order R1-2012-15 does several things. It maintains the same effluent limits for the wastewater treatment facility. It maintains the same effluent limits for the power plant as the previous permit did. With one exception, there was a waste stream that we weren't previously regulating in the last permit, a discharge point that we now have effluent limitations, which are similar to other effluent limits that were on what we call low-volume waste discharge points. So that's a change for the power plant. And the effluent limits from the storage pond that go into the river are also the same as the previous permit. One of the biggest differences is that Eel River Power is now recognized as a discharger, where previously there was a single liability or responsibility assigned to the single owner. And this permit also incorporates limitations on the flow from the pond into the river, which is commensurate with what we do in other Eel River discharges. And we're also allowing, in response to comment from the Town of Scotia Company, the beneficial reuse of water from the storage pond for dust suppression. Another thing that this permit does, which was not done in the previous permit, and I think it's going to come to the heart of some of the discussions that you might have later, is that this permit identifies an additional waste stream. The previous permit was sort of silent on, we're regulating liquid waste here, but we were sort of silent on the additional waste stream that occurs at the power plant. And that additional waste stream is fly and bottom ash, which is a solid waste. So in this permit, what we've done is we've basically said, you have another waste stream, and that waste stream is not being regulated by this permit, but we want to identify the need for that waste stream to be regulated in some way. And so we've given a deadline in this permit of 2013. Actually, you'll see in your late changes, which I should have mentioned earlier. What color are those? They're on green. Late changes, item number 10.
Lisa, can I interrupt you briefly?
Yes.
Here? So as I understand these changes, they recognize the authority under or the requirement under Title 27 for the regulation of ash, correct?
Correct.
And the permit reflects that.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I think...
And excuse me again. By the way, that is... There are two of these green sheets, so we're doing a two-for-one here because this does apply both... This does come up into Fairhaven as well.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so what we've done between the two permits is that we've made the language in that section mimic one another.
They're consistent.
They are consistent.
Thank
exactly.
You.
And so some of the late changes that you're seeing are to, you know, tweak that language, take one word out here and change the date there to
yes.
make sure that they're the same. And but I just want to make it really clear that nothing in this MPDS permit either allows or disallows anything to do with ash. All it does is call out the fact that there's an additional waste stream and that that waste stream needs regulation. And typical to some of the things that we do in other permits, we have stated, you know, rather than today, this very second, you need to do something different. We've said by July of 2013, you need to have some, you know, a plan in place. So although, you know, we probably need to deal with ash at a different time, as we've stated here in the language, I just want to be really clear that this permit does not regulate ash in any way.
This is an MPDS permit for the liquid waste from these two facilities.
Exactly.
Understood.
Okay. All right. So why are we here? I mean, that's kind of a little aside. And so one of the reasons that the biggest reason that we're here is because in our many negotiations back and forth with Town of Scotia and the Eel River Power folks, Eel River Power has requested separation of liability from Town of Scotia. They are two separate and distinct entities, and we can see the logic in that. So their request was that we would either regulate them under individual waste discharge requirements with state authority only, not using our federal authority for discharges to surface water, or that we would see them in some way as discharging to the Town of Scotia wastewater treatment facility and treat them under some kind of pretreatment agreement or vision. So we did meet with them, and we've discussed this at length, and we've looked at the regulations, and we came back and offered that we could write two NPDS permits at this time because we are viewing the discharge from the log pond as discharging to a water of the U.S., the Eel River, and that both entities discharge into that conveyance. So I don't think we quite have agreement. With Eel River, they would still like to be regulated under waste discharge requirements or the pretreatment agreement, as I mentioned. We looked at the idea of the pretreatment agreement as well, and the regulations are pretty clear that a pretreatment agreement, although we might be able to look at that at some time in the future, it needs to be done with a public entity that has the legal authority to impose regulations or requirements on the entity which is discharging into their system. And right now, Town of Scotia Company, LLC, is not in that position. It's possible, I'm not guaranteeing anything, but it's possible that we might be able to take another look at that as we move forward and Town of Scotia becomes a CSD. But right now, we feel that that's premature. And so, you know, we would continue looking at this with the Town of Scotia CSD and Eel River Power in the future, but right now we feel that this is the best way to, other than having two MPDS permits, which we're still willing to do, that this would be the best way for us to regulate these two entities. So with that, I would recommend that you consider adoption of the MPDS permit with late changes as proposed.
Thank you. Can I ask a quick question, please? I notice, yes. just a technical question, I noticed that there's testing in here for PCBs that is in quite a few of the sample locations. Does this facility have a history of PCBs?
No. In fact, they really don't have a history of PCBs. And the reason that you're seeing that is because we have, based on our best professional judgment, applied the effluent limit guidelines from the federal regulations for coal and fossil fuel burning power plants to this wood burning power plant. Rather than adapting or investigating the opportunity for, you know, individual effluent limitations in sampling, we've sort of transplanted directly from the federal guidelines, and so that's an artifact of that.
Is there a way to make that artifact disappear if, in fact, that's not something that is a issue of a constituent concern at this facility?
There is.
Okay.
We can, again exercise our best professional judgment, and we can state that, you know, based on the history and based on, you know, sampling trends, that we are not seeing this constituent, and we can exercise the authority to either extremely limit. It would be my first recommendation if we were going to change something to limit the number of samples that we're collecting for that. But we also could do an an anti-backsliding analysis to say that, you know, for these reasons and because we are already applying best professional judgment, that we aren't obligated to hold to the ELG specifically and that we could remove it.
Okay. Ms. Doherty?
I don't want to interrupt that thought. My name is Mona Doherty, senior engineer with our wastewater and stormwater unit, but I did want to speak on the ash issue before we move on, so I didn't want to interrupt your thought there.
Understood. Okay. Thank you for that.
Mr. Chair. Yeah. Thanks, guys. This is a good explanation. One quick point of clarification, or just so I understand it right. We're in the summary, we talk about that discharge point 16 accounts for roughly 99% of the discharge. You've added 17, and it's just more for an accounting process for the rock-wood separation adding that as a discharge point, that would constitute roughly less than 1% of the overall discharge in the facility?
Right.
Okay. And it's just more of being thorough.
It is rockwood separation is mm-hmm. essentially the washing of the bottom ash, and so we've decided to just keep monitoring that.
Great. And secondly, within the lifetime of the permit, if the entities if they are able to form a CSD, do we have an opportunity to reopen and modify as needed to be able to accommodate some of the concerns that they were having? So.
We can.
Okay.
We can look at opening it. I think some very key things would need to be in place, and it would be an interpretation of the regulations that we would need to talk even further with our council about. But yes, we can open the permit if it's appropriate.
Okay. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Any other board questions? Mona, I kind of hate to do this to you. I think that I have some speaker cards, and I think this ash thing is going to take a life of its own. I'm thinking out loud here that it might be good to take some speaker cards. I know that you're on a leg and a half over there, and I apologize for making you do this, but I might think that I just don't know if maybe having – and I'll ask you. You know, you might want to say – and let me do this. Let me just backtrack here for a minute. Would you please address us on the ash issue since you're here and you're prepared? And then we will take this as it goes. So
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me for my remiss.
And members of the board, I'm Mona Doherty again, senior engineer with our wastewater and stormwater unit. I just wanted to say very briefly that our staff has recently become aware of some serious ash concerns. It's kind of two different elements of it. One is handling and storage at our ash producing facilities, and we actually have many more than are actually being considered today. And the other issue is ash disposal. So both of those are going to be addressed vigorously outside of the Scotia and Fairhaven permits. We're going to be looking at the ash on site with our ash producing facilities, the BMPs for industrial stormwater under the industrial stormwater permit, for ash handling and storage to make sure that we actually have complaints, and we've done inspections on some other facilities that have had issues with their ash containment on site. So we'll be addressing that. And then I believe our solid waste unit will be working on regulation for the disposal of ash.
And Mona, just to be clear, a couple things. So this permit clearly is an MPDES permit for liquid. At the same time, this permit recognizes the Title 27 authority for or requirements to store ash in accordance with Title 27. It sounds like then you have, or staff has a plan or proposal then to deal with the end use disposal handling of ash. At the same time, are you saying that then stormwater permits and that type of thing would apply more immediately to maybe what's happening practice out in the field now? Because what I heard earlier is we're going to have some type of resolution maybe on ash in a year. And can you clarify that for us?
Sure. I'm sorry if I was confusing. The facilities and our other ones as well currently have industrial stormwater permit coverage. So we're going to be working with them immediately to address the BMP issues. And in addition, this permit does require compliance with Title 27, but we are giving them some time for their storage. So until they comply with that, we will be working under the industrial stormwater permit to improve their best management practices.
Okay. Okay, why don't we do this? I've got a couple speaker cards. Let's move off to speaker cards, and then we'll probably have you back. The first speaker card I have is Charles Abbott, Yale River Power Company.
My name is Charles Abbott. I'm with Yale River Power. First, I'd like to thank the board for allowing me to speak today. I'd also like to thank the staff for working closely with us on our comments to the NEPTES permit. Particularly, Lisa Bernard is very. Closer to me, thank you. Sorry. Is that better? Okay. Particularly, Lisa Bernard, who's very knowledgeable and has actually been quite helpful in the process. In November 2010, Eel River Power acquired the cogeneration assets that were previously held by Pacific Lumber and then subsequently Town of Scotia. The NEPTES permit has been in the name of Town of Scotia since our acquisition. And at the time of acquisition, we executed agreements that provided for the relative responsibilities of the discharges. Our discharge to the Log Pond, and ultimately Town of Scotia's discharge to the river. Under those current agreements, we have operated and maintained compliance with the requirements in a cooperative manner with Town of Scotia Company LLC, which is governed by agreements between the parties. We are really proposing that this arrangement or these agreements be recognized by Regional Water Quality Control. Ultimately, the discharges to the Log Pond, we propose that they be regulated as waste discharge requirements to the Log Pond. Town of Scotia and ERP currently use our agreements to designate responsibilities and liabilities under the NEPTES permit. Town of Scotia holds the NEPTES portion of the permit and, in fact, is responsible for discharge 003, which is the point where water leaves and goes to the Eel River. What we proposed, we believe, provides the same monitoring requirements, the same assurance of water quality control, but allows the parties to maintain their commercial and contractual arrangements. And that's really what we've asked for.
Can I ask you, Mr. Abbott, so as I understand this, am I correct to understand because the facility discharges to a log pond that, as I read it in the board packet that I have, the assumption is that is not waters of the U.S., so then you're not subject to MPDS.
And that is our view.
Is that correct? And yet you're saying that you have a civil contractual agreement that allows you to discharge under conditions and agreements to that surface water body. And your contention then as a discharger, you want to be subject to the discharge to the log pond pursuant to WDRs.
That's correct.
Just for my own point of clarification.
With the Town of Scotia ultimately holding the NEPTES permit.
Okay. Any other questions? We're going to hear more about this. So I appreciate your point of view. I think that as I hear it, staff, I think staff is open to having some type of interpretation or maybe that's the wrong word, some type of work through on this. I'm just not so sure how this goes right now. Maybe it's an interpretation of water bodies, waters of the state, waters of the U.S. I don't know how to do this right now, so, and I don't want to prejudge this, so why don't we do this? I have a couple other speaker cards. Is there anything else you would like to address?
No, that's all I have. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Chris Sanders, and I also represent Eel River Power, and you have...
And you're next, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning. I want to reiterate, you know, Charlie's comments about staff's efforts on this. I mean, you're looking at a permit that must be 100-plus pages, and staff have been just phenomenal in putting this thing together. And then we've had discussions with staff, and everybody has been phenomenally cooperative. We have one issue that's remaining, and hopefully we can get that resolved today. And that one issue is just whether Eel River Power is responsible on the NPDES permit or not. And it is the contention of Eel River Power that all of our discharges are to the log pond, which is an artificial water body. It is not a water of the U.S. And then Town of Scotia, who owns the log pond, takes that and discharges to the Eel River, which is the NPDES component of the discharge. And so, I mean, it's what we believe to be a relatively simple fix of the permit, and we provided a very brief red line strikeout component of our proposed changes of the permit that would specifically address those topics. It's our belief that sort of the permit itself is a little bit of a legacy as a result of it being under a single ownership. The distinction didn't make any difference in the past. It was all owned by one entity, and so it was, you know, one permit, and it didn't make any difference as to what was defined as waters of the U.S. versus a discharge to land. I mean, this is the discharge of Eel River Power is to an artificial water body, which is arguably a discharge to groundwater, not a discharge to water of the U.S. And as Charlie said, we're not requesting any modification of the monitoring. We're still subjecting ourselves to what's being proposed, but the only distinction being that it's not considered a water of the U.S. and that only Town of Scotia be on the NPDES portion of the permit.
Mr. Sanders, can I ask you a couple questions?
Sure.
As far as just sheer volume here, the great bulk of discharge to the pond is once through cooling water from the power facility. Is that correct?
Correct. I should defer to somebody who knows.
Okay.
One of the turbine generators utilizes the log pond in a once-through manner so that water is withdrawn from the pond and returned to the pond directly with no modification or simply rejecting heat. There is also cooling tower blowdowns, which are regulated separately. I'm sorry, I don't recall the discharge permit numbers, but
okay.
But we are, in fact, the predominant volume in the pond.
Okay. Can I ask, too, is your aversion to an NPDES permit really from the standpoint of a liability issue? Because I'm curious. I recognize the artifact, the fact that this all used to be the company town and under one umbrella. At the same time, there's not a CSD here yet. There's a CSD coming, it sounds like, and therefore a legal entity from which to operate to and regulate from. At the same time, I'm curious just the difference that, as you see it, of NPDES versus WDRs. Of course, NPDES, I believe, the mandatory minimum penalties and that kind of thing and some of the liability issues. And I'm just curious, is that where you're coming from? Is that your basic concern here?
I think that's generally our concern. Our general concern is that we have defined contractual arrangements that we understand and that have worked well with Town of Scotia. Being joint and severally liable under a NPDES permit where we do not discharge to U.S. waters is a concern for us.
Okay. Any board member questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. This may be more of a question for Lisa. It's a technical question regarding the connectivity. So, Lisa, maybe could you, water of the U.S. or not, can you give me a your thoughts on the hydrologic connectivity between the pond and the Eel River.
Thank you, gentlemen, by the way.
Thank you.
We might just have you back. Or...
Yeah, that would be really helpful. I'm a picture kind of person, so I'm asking Patty to put the picture back up.
That's fine. Your picture of the pump house, by the way, was beautiful.
Yeah, thank you. So you can see that we're relatively close to the Eel River, just in general. There's a significant... I'm not sure if you're asking about the under potential.
I guess it gets to the designation of, you know, how we're viewing a separation between water of the U.S., water of the state, and the Eel River. It would, on one hand, you could argue that there is a connection when they're discharging. It's directly linked up. So
right.
Therefore, that pond falls under an MPDES permit. Then whatever discharge goes into the pond while it's discharging, one could argue the same connection. So I guess it comes back to staff's view on, is this one system that's connected and linked to a water of the U.S., and therefore that's why we're requesting the MPDES coverage, or is there some other reason for that?
So right now the way that staff is viewing the pond is that we are considering that it is a man-made conveyance similar to a big, wide pipe, if you will.
You're talking about the pond?
Mm-hmm.
The log pond.
Right here.
Former log pond, I should say.
Mm-hmm. that discharges, you know, under a controlled manner to the river. If we were to actually identify it as waters of the state, I'm not really sure we could not also have to designate it as waters of the U.S., and I would defer, you know, that's kind of a deeper legal question probably, but I think it would be difficult to make that separation. So it was constructed, as far as I can tell, and I've tried to look into the history. It was constructed with the intention of being a pond for the floating of logs. Like I said before, it's very conveniently located for our current needs to provide for storage. It also receives the stormwater runoff from the power plant, as well as the stormwater runoff from the community. There's possibly groundwater connections as well, but that hasn't been investigated, and we aren't asking for that to be investigated.
And again, a stormwater permit is an MPDES permit as well.
It is.
Correct. Can I ask a legal clarification here, please? Because there's a contractual agreement. There's a civil contractual agreement here that is just a little bit in the middle of this thing. At least it's being put forth as we have agreements here and we discharge per the agreement. That agreement is outside our authority, however, and we're talking about a interpretation of whether something, this log pond and its connection to the river, whether it be perhaps underflow or discharge point three, designates the waste from the power plant as being an MPDES waste.
Right.
Can you provide a legal perspective on that, please?
Well, I mean, the bottom line is that their discharge reaches the waters of the U.S., which is the Eel River.
So, in essence, the theory that the pond is a conveyance system for in and of itself is then holds that it goes all the way through that system and ends up in the Eel River during the discharge season.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
I mean, I think they would argue there's an argument that there's a code provision in the federal regulations that provides for if you discharge to a treatment facility, then you're done. But there, as Lisa explained, there are certain parameters for that to qualify. And we think those elements are not met at this time. And so I don't see how legally we could issue a Port of Cologne permit rather than a NPDES at this time for the power plant.
Mr. Corbett?
Yeah, I mean, but that will be solved if there's a community. Oh, good idea. That would be solved if there was the establishment of a proper services district. So I think, realize it's awkward now to have potential liability, but should have a short end game to it, I think.
So perhaps part of the workout to this comes from the fact that there could be or there is going to be the development or the formation of a community service district that becomes a legal entity instead of Town of Scotia. I don't know if that solves issues here.
Well, just to be clear, it's not the treatment, the actual treatment needs to be up to par, too, which it may or may not be, is
One of the other things I think that we, I know that we put in our response to comments is that staff is unable to see, and maybe, you know, maybe there's an argument there, but one of the requirements for pretreatment is that the treatment system has to be designed to meet the requirements of the Clean Water Act. So, you know, these are under federal requirements, right? If you're going to be in pretreatment, there's some regulations in the federal that say how pretreatment happens and who gets to be under that. And so one of those requirements is not only that you discharge into the treatment system of a municipality that has the authority to regulate you, but also that you're discharging into their treatment system, which is designed to meet the requirements of the Clean Water Act. So I think that takes us back to, this is originally a log pond, and I don't think anybody is disagreeing that something happens in this log pond, and it's likely that the water that comes out of discharge point 003 right here is probably a benefit to the Eel River for whatever's going on in there, but I'm not in a position right now to say that I feel that there's a designed treatment occurring in that pond.
Okay.
That could be worked out in the future, right, on the whole.
It's possible that we could work that out in the future, but I think it would be really important for the CSD to be at the table, and they would need to have some authority and different things.
Well, and so that goes then. You haven't, staff has not said a flat no that, you know, this could not happen. I see as I read your comments back, because I did look at those, that, you know, we will consider this. We can't resolve this right now.
Right.
And perhaps this lives for another day. But right now, to cover this on a permit to be consistent with what has happened here in the past and what continues to be discharged to Eel River, I hear you say that the most appropriate way to go, and I hear legal authority is there to have this being covered currently under an MPDS permit.
Right.
That's our current recommendation.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Lisa, for that clarification. I have another speaker card for Frank Basic.
Good morning. I'm Frank Basic. I'm the president, and I direct the legal affairs for the Town of Scotia Company. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Ms. Kuhlman, Mr. Rivera, and counsel. I have the remarkably rare opportunity today to tell you I don't disagree with any of the facts or circumstances that have been presented to you, and I don't object to any of the positions taken either.
Yeah.
On behalf of the Town of Scotia Company, I can confirm that we do have negotiated agreements with the purchaser of the power plant property when it was conveyed to Eel River Power. That agreement, however, is not before you. It may or may not be germane, as your counsel tells you, but it essentially says that we'll go forward with the form of regulation that the Water Board determines. And we don't have any objection to the Water Board conditioning operation and discharge by the power plant under a WDR or other significant regulatory format, as long as there are enforceable standards, and we understand what they are, and we agree with them. The fact is, the agreements that we've negotiated indicate that the standards required by the Water Board will be the standards that the power plant lives by. That's how we are operating today. If there is a violation or a discharge exceedance by the Water Board at any of their, by the power plant at any of their discharge points, then they are responsible and they would take responsibility. And we have managed to get along famously under those circumstances. We don't foresee that changing, but our contract says that if that's what the Water Board wants to do, we can have a WDR and a pretreatment agreement. If the Water Board prefers the NPDES permit format, certainly we'll adhere to that as well. It really doesn't affect us one way or another, but we're not objecting to the proposal by the power plant. With regard to the Community Services District, we have received approval from LAFCO to form it, but there are several very significant conditions of approval that require legal agreements, conveyance of properties, facilities, tools, equipment, and the like. Those have to be undertaken over a course of time with great care. We're in the process of engaging, and will shortly, an interim general manager to guide the CSD through its formative and foundation process. Right now, we've already had an election. 94% of the people in who voted in Scotia approved the formation, and they elected board members, five board members. They operate under the Brown Act because they're elected officials, even though they haven't yet taken their seats. And so we operate somewhat formally, but they cannot yet deliver services, charge fees, or act as a community services district. And that may be some 6 to 9 months away, because among other conditions of approval, the county and LAFCO required that the town of Scotia upgrade certain extensive wet infrastructure. And so we have engineering design and contracting going on, and we're going to be replacing water and sewer and storm drain lines throughout town. We don't know exactly when all of those conditions will be met, and the CSD will go into operation. A last point in that regard is that the agreement between Eel River Power and the Town of Scotia Company does not bind the CSD. Obviously, we cannot enter into an agreement which requires them to perform or to adhere to any contractual standard before they even go into operation. And as council and staff has indicated, when and if they are completely formed, they need a place at the table. And I can't speak for them. I am responsible for the care and feeding of the town, however, and I want to honor your staff's diligence in helping us understand what it is we need to do in order to protect water quality, and particularly, again, Lisa here, for explaining cogently and briefly the reorganization. If you have any questions about that bankruptcy or reorganization or the relative positions of the parties, I'd be glad to answer those questions. And then lastly, let me say, over the last couple of years of operating the town of Scotia, I've had the pleasure to work with staff and your board supervision staff, whereas for many years before this time, as an advocate for Pacific Lumber Company and timber companies generally, and Messrs. Massey and Corbett will recall, we've not always had so beatific a relationship. But I will, as well as everyone else, take the opportunity to thank Ms. Kuhlman for her professionalism and courtesy over the years, even during those tough times, as well as Mr. Rivera and Ms. Olson as well. I find myself, again, in the favorable position of agreeing with staff and trying to assist us all in the job of protecting water quality for the town of Scotia.
Thank you, Mr. Basic. Any questions from board members?
Thank you.
Okay. Oh, Mr. Massey.
I don't think this is a question necessarily for Mr. Basic, as it may be for Lisa. And maybe even Ms. Olson. We have an NPDES permit on the town of Scotia, and that guarantees that we have a hook to make sure that we maintain water quality. But with respect to the power company, what do we have in the absence of putting one of these, a WDR or an NPDES permit, do we have a hook that guarantees that they do and maintain the quality of water? Because we are not party to the agreement between the town and the company, correct?
That's correct.
And so we really don't have, from our perspective, a hook. And I can see the power company is
ready to
champion
talk.
To go. But from your perspective, Ms. Bernard.
From our perspective, we we can't quite see how the WDR would work at this time. And we feel that the NPDES permit is the way that we assure the protection of water quality based on the discharges that come from the power plant.
And actually, our hook right now is that we cover them both equally under an NPDES permit until such time that may change.
Correct.
You're not saying no, but you're not saying yes either. Right now, it's maybe premature with the formation of a CSD or maybe some other information that comes forward. But right now, it sounds like what I'm hearing is that the equal and joint coverage of under an NPDES permit right now is the appropriate way to proceed.
Right. And I think, you know, I mean, I think it's easy for us to recognize that, you know, discharges from here, which we call point 12, you know, we would look to the CSD or the wastewater treatment facility, you know, for violations of any requirements at that point. And then for the points here, and point 16 is actually in this area here, you know, for an enforcement perspective, we would look to the power plant, although they're all joint, because of the way the permit is structured, they're sort of jointly and severally liable.
Yes.
And so I guess that's where their private agreement would come into play, although we would have no control over that.
Correct.
So if there were some violation of any of those requirements for any of those points that are going into the log pond, you know, the letter would go to both, so to speak. And then also there's the single discharge point here that leaves underground and goes to the river. And, you know, that's point 003. And we would look to both entities again for any violations of effluent limitations for discharges going to the river, including whole effluent toxicity and those kind of things, which under this joint permit, the monitoring is limited for some of those water quality-based effluent limitations and parameters, such as whole effluent toxicity, to that single point. So, and I'm not sure how we would look at whole effluent toxicity if we were going to be separating them. One of the ideas that we came up with was to bring those monitoring requirements back to the individual points of discharge, which would multiply that monitoring.
Mr. Corbett, did you have a question?
Oh, I just want to say, I mean, I think our option is we're open to someone coming back. We have to have a there to negotiate, and we don't know the form of it yet. And then at that point, they will deal with pretreatment, treatment, and other federal standards. And I do think it's wise to go there in the long run without getting into changes in the government code, municipal financing, special districts, but there are some issues I could see where the company would be concerned, and I do think a separation would be good, but it's, we don't have the separating entity, basically.
That's where we're at.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Do you mind just for 1 second?
We do not mind at all.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Again, Chris Sanders. I want to make clear to the board that we're not requesting to not be regulated. We are absolutely still being regulated under waste discharge requirements for all of our discharges to the storage pond.
Yeah. By the way, I think that's very well understood.
Okay.
I totally get that.
Okay.
I think it's a matter of maybe perspective of where the authority lies and comes from. Whether it be WDRs, and I think actually Mr. Basic said this, whether it be WDRs or whether it be an MPDS, as long as you're regulated, it sounds like that works. But at the same time, at this point in time, I think the way that it's being proposed is to simply, we could change it in the future, but as long as it's not going to be wholly right now be an entity that we can separate, then we, I believe, are being proposed, or we would take this up as an MPDS permit. I don't think there's any contention about the ability or the requirement for you to have regulation on your discharge. I think that's very clear.
Well, I mean, I guess one additional item is that the log ponds themselves, you know, the federal regulations as well as the guidance are pretty clear that, you know, storage and treatment facility ponds are not waters of the U.S. And even further, that the code, the water code, when it requires a report of waste discharge, if you discharge into a community water system or community sewer system, a report of waste discharge is not even required.
Right.
I mean, so we are subjecting ourselves to the regulation of the board. We were just trying to limit it, primarily because we don't control the storage, the final storage pond, nor do we control the discharge. But
thank you for that clarification,
thank you very much,
by the way. Absolutely. Okay, this morning's kind of been a long, crooked road here, and I'm not so sure we're gonna solve that anytime soon. But here's the thing: we have item number 3, which is a consent item, and we have item number 10, and then we have Excuse me?
Well, there may be a gentleman who...
No, we have some other speaker cards. The thing is that we also have ASH then, because there's an ASH component to this thing now. I believe we're settled on the MPDS issue here. The regulation of liquid waste from a facility under an MPDS permit to waters of the U.S. and state. I'm settled with that. If I can ask, then we would move on to take up an issue that's ancillary to this, which is the handling of ASH. Oren, you had two speaker cards in here.
Is that okay?
Yeah, actually, I think I've been asked to take a five-minute break. I think that would be appropriate. Can I ask, then, we would take a five-minute? Actually, let's make it 10. We'll be back at 10 minutes to 11 and take up the second session, please. And where we left this off is we have two items in front of us, one being a consent item and one being an agenda item. I think we're rather settled on the issue of permit. It's really the extenuating or ancillary issue of ASH. I have four speaker cards, and coming back, Christina, you were next.
And Mr. Chairman, I just had one comment. I feel a little ill at ease of combining these because there is a difference between the concentration of TCDD in filter feeder oysters that are supplying 50 to 70% of California versus a discharge to the Eel River. Now, I think collectively we'll find a common regulatory approach, but I do think there's a higher standard for immediately consumed mussels that concentrate TCDD. So.
Well, let me say this, please.
Mr. Chair, if you want to go ahead and adopt or close the hearing on Scotia, you could do that.
Okay.
Well, in other words, I wasn't recommending, Chair, that this is Samantha Olson. I wasn't recommending that you combo the vote. I was just suggesting that you could hear both items.
No, all I wanted to do, to be clear, is that we have two items. One is a consent item and one is an adoption item. I'm fairly settled with the permit side of these things. All I'm saying is that there's a related issue here. We will not take them as a combined adoption. We will adopt them separately. It's just that there is extenuating information here that's relevant and germane. I would just like to hear that out. I don't see it as necessarily changing much except going through a fact-finding, and I would like to explore that, leave it on the table right now for adoption, and go through this process. We'll come back and grab it.
Okay.
Please.
Good morning, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. My name is Christina Plocker. I'm from McKinleyville, California, and I will be reading a letter from Greg Dale. He's the Southwest Operations Manager for Coast Seafood Company in Eureka. Regarding waste discharge requirements for DG Fairhaven Power Facility in Humboldt County, dear North Coast Regional Water Quality Board, I have requested that this letter be read and provided to you as my public comment regarding above NPDES permit. My name is Greg Dale. I am the Southwest Operations Manager for Coast Seafoods Company, located at 25 Waterfront Drive, Eureka. Our farm is located on Humboldt Bay, and our company and livelihood depends on the quality of water in Humboldt Bay. I would like to request that the uncontested items 3 and 9 be removed from the uncontested items list and continued to the June 7th meeting in Willits, California, where additional information may be communicated. I apologize for my tardiness in this matter, but it has been recently brought to my attention that the items 3 and 9 of the uncontested items on your agenda, if approved, would allow for the continued disposal of potential dioxin-containing combustion byproducts, ASH, into the Humboldt Bay watershed without any regulatory oversight, permit, or sampling requirements. Humboldt Bay is currently listed under the Federal Clean Water Act Section 303D as impaired with dioxins. Currently, stockpiling and disposal of potential dioxin-containing combustion byproducts is occurring within the Humboldt Bay watershed in very close proximity to the Humboldt Bay and the Mad River Slough. Over the years, we have worked quite hard in conjunction with the regional board to improve and maintain the quality of the runoff into the Mad River Slough and Humboldt Bay. The storage and disposal of combustion byproducts next to Humble Bay is problematic. I find it curious that I cannot economically dredge our docks in Eureka due to the presence of low levels of dioxin in the sediments, and another company is being allowed to discharge dioxins within the watershed at presumably much higher concentrations, and this seems imbalanced. Please reconsider uncontested items 3 and 9 and continue them to the June 7th meeting to allow for additional input. Sincerely, Greg Dale. Thank you.
Christina, let the record reflect that you read somebody else's notes, and that's fine. If you could provide a copy of that to Clerica, which it looks like we have.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Any questions or comments from board members? Thank you, Christina.
Thank you.
Oren, you have a speaker card for this item. You didn't get in trouble. You just got we just saved it till now.
Kind of a spanking.
I believe this is where you left off. I think you've kind of stated you've gone through your slides, so.
So if the permit is approved as written, it will result in 4.2 million pounds of dioxin containing combustion byproducts to be land applied between now and 2013. Based on the current practices, what we see in the watershed right now, some if not all of the 4.2 million pounds will be placed in the Humboldt Bay watershed, which is impaired with dioxin on a federal level 303D. Under the current permit, combustion byproducts are not required to be analyzed for metals or dioxins, and soluble metals are certainly an additional issue when it comes to the ashes. There'll be no sampling of the cumulative loading of agricultural soils. None will be required, nor will there be any sampling required for surface waters adjacent to the agricultural soils. And so, my perspective is that the number one source of ash, or number one source of dioxin that's currently getting into Humboldt Bay today is from ash disposal practices in the watershed. I understand that there's another solid waste permitting process. I don't understand why those permits are not in place now or underway. There's obviously a recognition of the hazard based on the way the permit is written, knowing that there's going to be required Title 27 storage and proper management of these materials. I don't understand why there's a year that we're going to wait, two more oyster festivals, and another 4 million pounds are going to end up in the watershed. Without oversight. I guess what I'd like is I'd like to see the solids to be permitted as soon as possible through the proper channels. In the meantime, I think it's reasonable and prudent that the ash residues, the combustion byproducts, are not allowed to be disposed of within the Humboldt Bay watershed because of its impairment. And that speaks to the oysters without regard to the beef, our grass-fed beef, that is incorporating the dioxins into their fatty tissues and that's being consumed and into our dairy products that are labeled as organic. That's where the majority of the dioxin gets into our food system. So I guess, my wish list is to get it permitted as soon as possible. In the meantime, prohibit disposal of ash in the Humboldt Bay watershed and to proceed with testing of soils, ash, and surface water. At the end of the year, without any testing, the discharger will say that they need time to collect samples and to know what they have and how to deal with it. And I just say that needs to, if they're going to be able to proceed to dump anywhere they want, there ought to be some minimum sampling requirements to keep track of that. And then there's the stormwater issues associated with the storage practices and the track out that's right now on Jackson Ranch Road, that these dioxin containing materials are tracked onto the public roads due to the way they're being handled. And I think that's it for me.
Oren, I want to thank you for bringing this up, being patient and hanging out while we work back to this point and connecting the dots. So any board member questions? Okay. Thank you very much. I have two other speaker cards, starting with Mr. Bob Marino. And actually, we're going to do a two-for-one here because Lisa Stromey's up as well. So welcome, folks.
Thank you. Bob Marino, General Manager of DG Fairhaven Power. Thank you for the opportunity to address the board. To my left, Lisa Bernard is...
Your left behind you.
Your other left.
My other left. Thank you, John. Lisa Strome is with SHN Consultants, my consulting engineers. For the record, our ASH program has been licensed by the state since 1998 as a soil amendment. Local farmers and dairymen use it as an alternative to using lime, which they cannot afford. The program is administered by a geologist at SHN Engineers who maintains a client list, analyzes the field to determine how many tons of the product will get the pH to where they want it to be. The landowner signs a BMP contract, which designates, and I think you might have a copy of an example of that.
We'll be entering it into the record, yeah.
You'll see the kinds of stipulations that the landowner has for tilling or capping the material once it's delivered. From a dairy perspective, and as we heard earlier today about the some of the economics of dairy producers, I give this product away to them. I truck it to them free of charge and provide them with materials in which to spread on the fields. They are required by the BMPs to, within a certain amount of time, till or cap the material. Also for the record, you know, I appreciate Mr. Plotcher's perspective. We have known each other for a number of years. I do not eat oysters at Orin. No, I don't. I'm sorry, I mentioned to Mr. Plotcher that I do not enjoy oysters. I'm willing to, you know, answer any questions you might have this time. You know, staff and Lisa and, you know, Kaysen and I have worked for quite a while on this permit, and we've discussed, and ASH has been a subject that we've been wrestling with for quite a while. And I think until we all become comfortable with what we want as the end product, you know, the end product of my production is renewable energy as well as an ash product, which has a beneficial use to the farmers. I've provided staff with the annual report for our ash dispersal program. It's a good program. I think it may, in fact, be the benchmark for other programs going forward. So I'd be willing to answer any questions you may have at this point.
Mr. Marino, can I ask you how much ash you're talking about from a facility like Fairhaven on an annual basis?
Gosh, you know what? Should be in the report. We don't actually quantify it as tightly as I do my incoming wood supplies, for example, but I burn perhaps 225,000 tons of wood per year. All of that wood is sawmill residual products, bark, chips, sawdust, as well as forest-derived material. I buy non-merchantable logs to utilize during the winter months. 100% of my feedstock is sawmill residual or forest derived. I feel my ash product is as pure as it can get, knowing what my waste stream, my in-feed stock is.
Do you take anything besides wood waste in that facility, Mr. Marino?
No.
So you take in 250,000 tons, no, quarter Is that right? 250,000 tons, quarter million tons.
Approximately.
Per year of wood waste residual.
Yes.
You run it through a power plant.
Right.
And you've got an ash product at the end.
We combust it and we make the steam from the combustion process, which goes to the generator. And we produce approximately, last year we produced right at 120,000 megawatts of renewable energy to Humboldt County.
Let me ask you, and maybe, Ms. Stromey, you can help me here. I noticed just briefly looking at this that there is some testing, item number 13, that there's some testing of soil samples on the receiving land from the standpoint of metals and cation exchange capacity, and I assume that's just because you don't want to overdo that. But is there, and maybe this isn't necessarily for you, but from the standpoint of discharge, a contention was is that there's dioxin in this material and there could be soluble or total metals that would be a concern. Are you aware of any analytical reporting that goes on with that material or testing that goes on with the material itself before application?
All of the testing that occurs, and again, Lisa Stromey with SHN, all of the testing that occurs is documented in an annual report that is provided to DG Fairhaven each year. This information was historically provided to the regional board for a period of time and then was discontinued under a previous program. So we do gather that information and analyze it. And part of what I presented today was, again, a list of BMPs, just to clarify that right now DG Fairhaven is going above and beyond in terms of setting forth a program that requires BMPs to be in place at the actual land application sites. And I've only given you page 1 and 2 to essentially show you what those BMPs consist of, but pages 3 and 4 are the actual disclosure statement and certification by the landowner that they will comply with those BMPs. So if at any time they do get a sense that metals are building up in their soils, they are required to look at alternatives, essentially to avoid having issues with that application.
Well, let me back you up for a minute. My question is, though, is there analytical testing done on the ash itself?
There is, yeah, and that was extensive testing of the ash itself was done as part of the certification process through the Food and Drug Administration as an actual agricultural amendment.
Because I believe the contention is not the fact that, you know, that you don't have a program or that there's best management practices in place. It's just that there is concentrations of perhaps things in this waste stream, recycle waste stream, that has a beneficial reuse that then is being applied to a watershed that is impaired for perhaps some. Well, it's impaired for dioxin in Humboldt Bay, and I believe that's a contention. So let me ask you, too, the slides that were put up this morning of a site that was, it looks like, a couple days ago, is that a normal practice? Is that something that you would feel that this time of year that that's best management practices in place? What's the history out there of end use, and how much do you control it? I would think that, you know, you have, you're the generator of the material. It then goes out under, in somewhat, you retain some responsibility for some of that best management practice.
Yes, I agree with that I do maintain a certain level of responsibility once it leaves my property by way of the contractor that I use for delivering it. I do not know currently if my ash was represented on that slide. I don't keep daily track of where the ash is going. That's why I hire consulting engineers.
Fantastic.
The other slide showed a stormwater runoff, which there are BMPs in place for. You know, they are redone throughout the rainy season should the hay bales blow out. That one site is called SL1 that slide represented, and that site is also impacted by road discharge, water from the road, in Bay Street, for example.
Well, and by the way, I got to admit, I see an opportunity here to learn something. I think that there needs to be a clarification maybe of an understanding from our side about what is exactly happening with this material. What's your protocol? I don't know what that is, and I mean that from my perspective, to know that this material is being handled in a way that is, you know, essentially in the best management practice, that we're not causing a problem by doing so. As this goes, I think that, again, I see opportunity here to learn something. I think that Fairhaven, as I hear it, and taking in a quarter million tons of, you know, wood waste material and converting it to clean power, that's a huge net green benefit. Absolutely. We need to be responsible on the backside and make sure we're taking care of the other side. It sounds like you are.
I agree.
I think you take that seriously from what I hear, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate that you're professional consultants working with you on that. I think the concern raised here this morning is valid, however, and that I see this as an opportunity to go forth and learn something in the interim.
Well, if I may, Mr. Chairman, the fact that the permit states July 2013, that gives both staff and the generators the ability to come to grips with whatever issues may be out there, which we've just learned of today.
Yeah, and I concur. And by the way, I am certainly not calling you out as doing something wrong here. I think that, again, this is something that, you know, I didn't know of this until basically we got into this permit. And so I tend to look for the opportunity and angle, and I see that I agree with you. I think that as that goes, I hear very much that you want to be a steward of your operation and do the right thing here. I just see the opportunity to go forth and learn something and maybe find the best way to do this, or maybe not do it, whatever that works. And I'm not trying to prejudge anything. I'm just seeing that opening, and I see actually an opening with my...
And then Heidi has hers up after mine. I just want to ask on the... Have you analyzed, and I know this gets exponentially more and more complex, but the types of TCDD that you're finding in the discharge, because there's a little slightly different decay rate, slightly different carcinogenic rates, and it can make a difference depending on, and I don't know enough on what sources produce what kind, and it's a very complex subject, but do you have any, can you shed any light on that?
In terms of dioxin sampling on the ash itself, I would say that to date, the program is focused primarily on heavy metals
okay.
that are in the ash product. So I'm identifying probably an area where we'll need to do additional research.
Okay.
But I did just want to clarify, and again, the reason why I presented these BMPs was because it does address the issue of the application of this material in the Humboldt Bay watershed itself. Again, I believe that material can be placed, and if appropriate BMPs are used, it can be prevented from being transported into those waterways. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to take a moment to, again, just read for the record that the current BMPs that DG Fairhaven is using includes that any soil amendment will not be applied in swales, drainages, or locations that will cause the amendment to be carried into surface waters. They're also required to maintain a 50-foot-wide buffer zone between the application areas and surface waters. The amendment cannot be applied when rain or stormwater will cause the material to enter surface water. And they're also required to apply it at agronomic rates, and the material needs to be tilled or harrowed into the soil within a certain time frame. So I think there are opportunities here to implement BMPs to help with this application to prevent that transport of material. And I think that you guys will find that this program has established a number of excellent BMPs that hopefully will provide the guidance that we can work through over this next year in the formation of a program for this waste material.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. Ms. Harris, did you have a question?
Yeah. I'm just wondering if Humboldt County has any permit requirements for the application of this or any of the other counties that you may have applications in. And then also if the Agricultural Commissioner's Office has tied in any sampling or testing that can be done through their different programs that they have. And then I also know that for animal consumption, especially under organic programs, those regulations are incredibly strict. And so I can't imagine that organic producers would be allowed to graze without having grass samples and those things taken into consideration before those fields can be declared organic. So there's a lot of information going on out here, and we're going to have to tease out everything. But yeah, I'm just interested. Does Humboldt County have any regulations on the applications?
Not that I'm aware of.
That you're aware. Has the Agricultural Commissioner's Office made comment, or have they tied into? Because I believe that they are familiar with this application because they control nearly everything that's applied, except for those things that are you can buy at Walmart or whatever. But
I have not talked to anybody in that capacity. Cindy Wilcox, who manages the program, may in fact be in communication with them. Since you mentioned organic, I have started recently pursuing an organic certification of that ash product. And it's as you pointed out, it's a long, drawn-out process, which I've given Cindy Wilcox at SHN free rein to pursue.
Thank you.
Any other board questions?
Yeah, just one. Just as a to kind of bring it back into the full picture here, your BMPs here are functionally a contract between your recipient and you that says if you're going to accept my product, you're going to play by these rules.
Exactly.
And once they sign it and it's on record, then it's the responsibility of how they manage that is transferred to them. And so from the examples that we had seen in some of the photographs this morning, if that is indeed a recipient of your ash, they may not be living up to those BMP agreements. But that's not necessarily you to go back and police and say, hey, wait a minute, you're not doing what you said that you'd be doing with our ash. That potentially falls under either our or another agency's regulatory authority.
Yes, I agree with you.
Okay.
What I would point out, and I will alert Cindy Wilcox, who is the program administrator, to check that out. And I'm sure she does do follow-up.
Sure, yeah. And you've
spent a considerable amount of time
in the
field. I guess
if it's not completely, you're not completely divorced from it, you actually
right.
have a program in place to check on
right.
that. So, great.
Right.
Thanks.
I think it's been very informative, and I think we'll come back to this. We will... My suggestion, and I see no other board member questions here. Thank you for your time. My suggestion at this point, or my recommendation, is let's take up adoption or consideration for adoption of these issues, and we'll come back around. And I see Mr. Corbett's.
I had a question to staff.
Sorry
prior
about that.
To the adoption.
No, please.
And to staff,
thank
my
you.
My understanding is that in the testing of the oyster shellfish within Humboldt Bay, that it's consistently been within public safety standards, and I just would like that confirmed.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. You made it twice up there, Mona.
Yeah.
You're doing good.
She's got her physical therapy done.
Check that box.
Good morning. I'm Kason Grady, Water Resources Control Engineer, staff to the board. And I can't answer that question. I do not know of the results of dioxins in the oysters. I can't speak to that.
Okay.
This is Mona from Mona Doherty with the Stormwater and Wastewater Unit. I wanted to raise a couple of staff's concerns that might help inform some of the information you just received. As we were talking about these ash issues and trying to come to grips to what's been happening and what our concerns are, two main issues were raised. One is that the fact that it's being regulated now as an agricultural amendment, that process does not really take into a water quality standpoint from runoff and that kind of thing. So that was one unanswered question that staff developed. The other one was that we thought the monitoring was inadequate to show some of our concerns here within an impaired water body. And then the other, I guess there's three. The other issue is that we have not come to grips whether we are dealing with a situation in which the ash is being applied at a rate that is an agricultural amendment versus disposal of a waste. And that was the third unanswered question that we've been wrestling with.
On that third question, I think that you might find your answers at the Ag Commission's office in Eureka for where, you know, it's being done at. And I'm sure that the Agricultural Commissioner would be able to assist you in that question.
Sure. I would just like to add that I can't imagine that there's actually an agronomic rate for dioxins because it's a bioaccumulative pollutant that has no, that I'm aware of, benefit to the crop itself.
Yes,
in terms of the other constituents in the ash, by all means, I think that it does have a lot of constituents that are beneficial to the crop.
Yes, dioxins are tough. I've worked with dioxins as far as cleanups go, and you test picograms per grams. That's like parts per squillion in my book, and that is really hard to deal with. They're ubiquitous, and they're very hard. By the way, I would note, though, that part of the issue this morning that was raised was not a direct discharge to waters. It was that it's potentially being uptaken in other pathways, and that this isn't just a water discharge issue. It's cumulative. It's biocumulative. It raises some good points. Again, I'm Mr. Sunnyside Up. I see some opportunity here. And that's kind of how I see it going.
I would agree. Staff intends to work on developing a program to deal with ash disposal throughout our region with Fairhaven, Scotia, and the other ash producers.
Yes, I would believe that this could also, this is not just a Fairhaven issue or Scotia. This is anywhere that there's combustion of that and then the ensuing land application of that type of combustion material.
One other thing I would like to mention is that we are continuing. We started recently working with our solid waste unit and our cleanup staff to try to kind of marry those programs and our ash and dioxin concerns into a more cohesive and regulatory program. So we are going to continue to work internally with the different units and divisions that have concerns about dioxins to incorporate all of that and hopefully into the regulatory program.
Mr. Corbett, did
you I'll just comment when we make the motion.
Okay. So from that standpoint, let me just say we'll come back to this, Ash, what I'd like to do. And I see Mr. Plutcher, I see you fidgeting.
Respond to the question about the food testing and the oysters and regulatory limits is that the FDA has taken eggs off the shelf at one part per trillion from an advisory level, and we got oysters out there at four or more. And it all depends on what time of year they're sampled and what reproductive cycle they're in, and it determines how much fat is in their system. It has a big difference. So the answer is if it was an egg, it'd be pulled off the shelf.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. Let me do this then. I would suggest that we put up for adoption then. We'll take the agenda item first, which is the uncontested agenda item of Fairhaven, which is item number 3, which was a consent item that got pulled. So looking for a motion for item 3.
Mr. Chair. I give you a motion to adopt order number R120112-0027.
I second.
Okay. All those in favor?
I wanted to make some comments. I want to say that we have to give a different level of review to this because of the proximity to the oysters. We have an impaired watershed. Any new additions is going to be a serious issue. And also, when we enforced on Sierra Pacific, we, of course, stressed their clear component to dioxin. However, those studies suggested there were other sources in the bay. This is also a high litigation where outside parties intervene. So, for example, when Green Diamond had their cleanup, they were subsequently sued and lost in court, and we'd approved that cleanup that it wasn't good enough. And lastly, we have a perception issue that's huge on both sides of the aisle. We have a perception of renewable energy, which is really a good and very valuable thing. We also have the perception if the oysters get perceived of as being dangerous, right or wrong, that could hurt. I mean, it would have significance at the California level because they produce somewhere between 15-70% in California. So this is a matter that we do need to bore into. We need to be careful to be fair to both sides. It's not going to be simple, but it's one that we will really have to tread carefully, I think, because if we blow the perceptions either way, it's terrible, and we'll have implications beyond the science and economics. So I'm supporting the motion, but I do want to say I think it's an issue that requires extensive, careful review.
Might I suggest, Mr. Corbett, that we consider adoption of agenda item number 3 and agenda item 10, and then come back and give staff specific direction based on some of your comments and maybe some others about what we want to do with this specific ash issue, if that would be acceptable.
That's acceptable.
And before you vote, Mr. Chair, just qualify that the motion is to adopt the order with the changes reflected in your agenda packet.
That's amended. Yes.
Correct. Thank you for that. So I have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Seeing none, we adopt item agenda number 3. Okay, moving on to the same issue with Town of Scotia Wastewater Treatment Facility and Eel River Power, agenda item number 10.
I'll move adoption, Mr. Chairman, of R12012-0015.
I'll give you a second.
All those in favor? Excuse me?
Aye.
Changes also?
As amended.
As amended.
As amended. My bad. Sorry. So as amended for adoption, have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Adopted. Okay. Mr. Corbett, can I ask you to just, you formulated some thoughts there, which I think are very cogent, and I think that they're important. I think we heard testimony this morning from participants in the community, from concerns here. I would think that it would be of great benefit to have staff take a very hard look at this and get back to us in a timely manner. I'm thinking maybe 6 months, and to get back to us and let's start to figure this out, because I think it does have potentially broad ramifications from a food supply, from public health issue, from a discharge of people that are, you know, facility issue, trying to generate green power and have, you know, combustion of dioxins. I think it would be very good to do that and to give staff some specific directions. So,
Mr. Chair, could I add to that? When it gets to the water and it gets to an oyster, it's clearly our world. But this is a land-borne product, and I don't know that this actually belongs to us until it gets wet. But it is a public health concern, and I absolutely agree with you that this is something which is a bioaccumulative thing. We need to understand that. But I would like the staff to give us an idea of exactly who's responsible for regulating this. If it's not wet, do we do it or do we not? I would like some clear direction on that.
Do we know it?
Well, we regulate dairy waste, and I do want to say there's heavy rainfall and regular periodic flooding. But I want to defer that to staff. The big policy issue is we need a much quicker fast track than waiting for TMDL that we can't fund, that's currently scheduled to be reviewed on dioxin Humboldt Bay in about 10 to 15 years. And so that's the other cautionary note, is that I think the board's requesting a much quicker review than the more comprehensive process that will happen when we get adequate funds to address it.
I wanted to thank Mr. Plotcher, Mr. Marino, Ms. Strami, and everybody else that gave testimony to this. It's actually very educational. Appreciate it.
Okay, so then I think I don't think we have to give a resolution or a motion or anything on this, but I think you hear some concerns here. What I would like to ask is you come back in 6 months. I would ask that you participate within the regulated community of the generation side. I'd like to think that there's a great body of professionals out there, whether it be associated with the discharge side or maybe the end use through Ag Commissioner's office or others, and then concerned citizens as well, to kind of ferret this out and try to wrestle this dioxin alligator to the ground, because we've run into dioxin before. It's tough. Dioxin is very tough when you're talking about such low concentrations, bioaccumulation, land use. It's all kind of tied together in this one big wad of stuff. Then we would direct you, staff, to go forth and come back to us in 6 months, no later than 6 months, please. And we'll go with that right now. Okay. We have moved through our action items. We made it through uncontested. We are going to go into extended closed session. We have a robust closed session today. I don't know when we're going to be back. Lunch is going to be in the middle of that. After that, we have an executive officer's report with really nothing else on the end tail end. So just from an advisory standpoint, we will be in a closed session till sometime early afternoon. With that, we're going to break, and we are done with this session.